Oh, the joy of anticipation. Truly, I waited a long time to see your smiling faces here this morning. The last time I was here was in 2006, leading the morning. Of belonging. Some of you remember this dendrochronology. Some of you have your pins here, and they're still there. Many have fallen off as I've carried it from place to place. But truly, as you look about you outside, you see all the trees that have been cut down. And take some time and kind of analyze those tree rings and see what kind of life that tree has had here in this special place. For the months of February and March, my wife and I were on sabbatical in Hawaii, of all places. And then later on, we went on to Transylvania. What an incredible contrast. And it all started kind of with Veronica. Is Veronica here this morning? She's from the church in Honolulu. Where is she? Oh, very good. Okay, so good to see you again. I've conversed with your pastor, your minister, Jennifer Kwong, and your church is just about the size of my church, but in the past year, your church has burgeoned with incredible things. Now, I was at their church a few years ago, and right down front here was some plastered underwear, and they called it Underwear Sunday. You remember that? Okay. That's when people give money for the homeless boys and girls that are living on the beach. So it really worked out well. So this morning, we're going to kind of look into Hawaii and nature. And I always wondered, and I've had emails back and forth with Jennifer about liberal religion. Why is it that there's only one congregation in all of Hawaii, and it's 125 members, the same size as my church in Erie, Pennsylvania? And so when I went to Hawaii, I stayed there for those 2 months, and I was looking to find out why liberal religion did not flourish in an incredible place of such multicultural diversity. And so I wrote to my friend Lono on the island of Molokai, and these are our opening words for today. He wrote back and said, "Hey, Steve, I don't know what you mean by liberal religion. However, the old Hawaiian way was God, Akua, your higher power, however you address it, gave life to everything, plants and clouds and grass and weeds and dirt and rocks and everything. So we woke up in church. We spent all day in church and went to bed in church. When we dreamed, we in church, although we never attended church." I've always so much enjoyed Hal Walker, and especially his chalice lighting. And one of the things that has lingered with me in my time away has been that chalice lighting. He has given it a little different twist this morning, but he's going to share a new version with us.
As you're willing and able, please join me in these motions. Please rise as you're willing and able. So I sing, then you sing.
May our chalice shine all through our lives. 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 May our hearts be open. And may our minds be still.
May our minds be still.
May our truth be spoken.
May our truth be spoken.
And may our lives fulfill this promise.
May our lives fulfill this promise.
This promise of peace.
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 And we'll remain standing for our opening song this morning. Come sing a song with me.
On a rose in the summertime and a rose in the wintertime. Let me tell you, a rose in the summertime is darn easy. You try to find a rose in the wintertime, but what I'm hoping is that our experience here will bloom continuously even in the wintertime as we share the love of Summer Institute. I've invited Corey to come and help me with responsive reading, but since you don't have the hymnals, Corey and I are going to respond to one another. And this is called A Hymn to Matter. And Teilhard de Chardin is a kind of a challenging person. He was indicted as a heretic in the Catholic Church. He really was ostracized by a lot of different people, but he was really a closet UU. Blessed be you, harsh matter, barren soil, stubborn rock, you who yield only to violence.
You who force us to work if we would eat.
Blessed be you, perilous matter, violent sea, untamable passion.
You who, unless we fetter you, will devour us.
Blessed be you, mighty matter, irresistible march of evolution, reality ever newborn.
You who, by constantly shattering our mental categories, force us to go ever further and further in our pursuit of the truth.
Blessed be you, universal matter, unmeasurable time, boundless ether, triple abyss of stars and atoms and generations.
You who, by overflowing and dissolving our narrow standards of measurement, reveal to us the dimensions of God.
Thank you, Corey. There was a lady, she was about 90-some years old, and I went up to her and I said, Mrs. Perry, I am going to be so sad when you die because you've been such an exciting person to me. And she says, oh, don't worry. I've always been a part of the universe, and when I die, I will continue to be a part of the universe. Our responsive reading this morning, Hymn to Matter from Teilhard de Chardin, is Rock Hard. Please realize that nature is totally challenging. It takes a lot of Bambis to feed a Lion King. And in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah says that the lamb will lie down with the lion. But you know, that first night, that lamb's not going to get much sleep. Chardin's mother was very religious, and she pushed him into professional religious life, and he became a Jesuit. But he mixed nature or science and religion so much that he realized that his God was too big for the Bible. It was too big for the Catholic religion. He was censored by the Pope for his ideas on expanding the consciousness in the universe. His God could not be found in that Bible, but only in the wide expanses of the universe. Chardin disagreed with Darwin's natural selection. He said it was too slow, that it was too passive. Chardin had the idea of creative evolution. The universe had a conscious purpose. He called it the Omega point. Chardin felt the universe is constantly developing towards higher levels of material complexity and consciousness. Nature for Teilhard de Chardin was not a simple recipe for life confined to field books on trees and birds, but was a vast philosophical construct that human beings were the powerhouse for moving forward. He saw the geosphere, and then the biosphere, and then he saw the noosphere, the sphere of human thought. Now, one of the most colorful, deep-thinking minds is that of J.R.R. Tolkien, the writer of The Lord of the Rings. I want you to listen to his description of nature. They were on an island in a sea of trees, and the horizon was veiled. On the southeastern side, the ground fell very steeply, as if the slopes of the hill were continued down under the trees. Like island shores that really are the sides of a mountain rising up out of deep waters. In the midst of it, there wound lazily a dark river of brown water, bordered with ancient willows, arched over with willows, blocked with fallen willows, and flecked with thousands of faded willow leaves. The air was thick with them, fluttering yellow from the branches, for there was a warm and gentle breeze blowing softly in the valley, and the reeds were rustling, and the willow boughs were creaking. Now, many of us have read The Lord of the Rings and shared it with our children to give them the gift of this story, an enthusiasm for the natural world. Now, I imagine Teilhard de Chardin and J.R.R. Tolkien, and we here today all remember going into the woods as a child to build forts or to build tree houses. In those special places at the pond or fishing on the lake or the waterfalls with the natural gas coming up and had to be relighted every spring. There's another fellow named Richard Love. He wrote a book in 2005 called Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from the Nature Deficit Disorder. So many of us can remember the farm, or even when we lived in town, we stayed outside until the streetlights came on. In the summer, it was about 9 o'clock. And we played with nothing more than a stick and a hunk of rope. And we had natural habitats for unstructured play and discovery nearly every day. There were ponds full of water. There were berry bushes everywhere. There were frogs, and they were our playmates. I remember carrying turtles in my pocket. Huck Finn did not have any corner on the market for fishing. Nature was a huge part of our childhood. And Jane Goodall, and I don't want any of you to try this tonight, but when she was 2 years old, she slept with worms under her pillow. But as we know, things have changed. I think it started with Joni Mitchell. They paved Paradise and put up a parking lot. Now our job is to tear down the parking lot and raise up a paradise. We live in an urban society in which everything is graded and riveted by human hands. And there are so many blockades for our children to get through in order to get back to nature. There are incredible legal fences. And there's also insurance liabilities that prohibit children from exploring the woods today. Playgrounds and blacktop are not grass. And from what I've heard, kids don't even get recess these days. They might get a baseball or a soccer outside, but it's in a blocked-in area with rules and with regulations and stipulations. But what about creativity? The architect Simon Nicholson came up with what he calls the loose parts theory. He says, in any environment, both the degree of inventiveness and creativity and the possibility of discovery are directly proportional to the number and kind of variables in it. And then my hero Richard Lowe says, a typical list of loose parts for a natural play area might include water, trees, bushes, flowers, long grasses, a pond, and the creatures within it, along with all other living things, and then go beyond that play area to woods and fields and streams, and the parts become looser and looser and even more potent to the imagination. Sounds like SI to me. Howard Gardner, who is a Harvard professor of education, came up with an idea in 1983 of multiple intelligences. I'm sure some of you teachers out here understand that better than I. Some of you know and remember those seven different intelligences: linguistics and logical mathematics and spatial and bodily kinesthetic and musical and interpersonal and intrapersonal. And recently he added an eighth, and that is naturalist intelligence, nature smart. There was another fellow, his name was John Rick. He left engineering because he felt called to teach eighth grade math. Rick was disappointed to find that nature has disappeared from the classroom except for when environmental catastrophes occur. Kids see nature as a lab experiment. And then there are computers. Please realize that I am not against computers. I have one right here. If it stops working in 10 seconds, I will slump to the floor and my defibrillator will go off and I will flop around like a fish. I am not against computers. But Richard Love calls undue dependence on computers as silicon faith. We might hear a little bit about that in the next hour, which he defines as a myopic focus on high technology as salvation for the world. Now, that eighth grade teacher, John Rick, presents an alternative. His answer is a classroom that turns outward. The grounds would become a classroom. Buildings would also look outward. And gardens would cover our campuses. His specialty, math, and also science, would be taught as a way to understand the intricacies of nature, the potential to meet human needs, and how all things are interlaced together. Well, school is out for the summer. Our children are prone to texting and videophilia. And how can we make the shift from loving screens to loving streams? There's a stream down there waiting for you. How do we go from less Disney to more wilderness? And yes, we can turn off the television. When my wife and we hiked up the arduous trails to see Mauna Loa Falls outside of Honolulu, we saw these great natural falls. And we were dead tired as old folks when we got up there. And we needed to sit down. But all around us were these young folks sitting on the benches, texting away, all the way back to Japan. Last Monday, I made a time for my young friend, Ian. He's 8 years old. He has a particular disability that keeps him from being able to work in social situations. He took me for a hike in those woods near his home. He had emailed me earlier to make sure that I wear a hat and long pants and hiking shoes, and his mom would have the insect repellent for us. He led me back to his little pond, about 3/4 of a mile back in the woods. We saw lots of animals. We saw incredible deer prints everywhere, plus a great number of plants. And this young lad, Ian, was so proud to tell me about the state tree of Pennsylvania. Anybody know what that is? Eastern hemlock. Very good. Ian was developing his eighth intelligence, nature intelligence. He showed me how important it was to leave no child inside. I'm looking forward to commission you to go out and investigate and discover and be a part of the nature that's all around us. But first, we need to ask permission. How many of you went to GA and the Phoenix? Would you all stand up for me, please? Okay. Now, thank you. Please have a seat. One of the folks from our church who went, she saw the people in the municipality taking down these signs, and they were throwing them into the trash. And so she said, boy, they should have given them away or even sold them. They could have paid for the cost of everything. So anyway, I brought this today. I told her I wanted to make sure. But what was the key idea that was taking place in the minds and hearts of people there? And what was the antecedent for that? And I guess it's called the doctrine of discovery. Anybody remember that doctrine of discovery? Okay. We all know what supposedly happened in 1492. But the very next year, the Pope gave permission to King Ferdinand and to Queen Isabella that wherever those explorers would go in the name of a particular prophet, that they could conquer that land and they could obliterate those inhabitants or else convert them to that particular religion. And so the doctrine of discovery has been used in horrible ways over the years. Asking permission is so important, and I want to tell you a quick story, and that is on the island of Molokai, at the very eastern end, you got to go 27 miles from the capital part, And then you go down the Halava Valley all the way to the end of that. And then you cross over that little river. And then you walk back through the jungle for about 2 miles past all these fields of wet area where they were planting various crops. And then you go up past all these ancient walls, and then you go all the way up into the mountain, and there's just Pali or mountain on both sides of you, and there's this incredible pond, probably not as big as this particular sanctuary, and it is the pool of the Mo'o. And the Mo'o is a giant lizard. Now, if you go swimming in there, you need to ask permission. And so what you do as you walk those 2 miles is you look for a particular tree called the tea tree. We're not talking about tea leaves. We're talking about T-I tree. And so you get a leaf of that, and you bring it with you, and you respectfully and reverently lay it down on the water. Now, if that leaf floats, then you know that you have permission to go into the water. But if that leaf sinks, you better not go into the water. Now, some of you are scientific, empirical type people, you know? Let me explain this to you. When there are incredible rains, those waterfalls cascade down, and the water is extremely turbulent, and it is possible that you could drown. So it's kind of logical that if you put that tea leaf on there and it floats, the water is nice and calm. But if it sinks, you can imagine that it's all tumultuous and that you shouldn't go into the water. Asking permission in Hawaii is so important. The kapu, or the taboo, is something you do not want to break. What is happening here in Gambier, Ohio, in Kenyon College, is that there was a history here. And in ancient times, there was a group of Indians, you might call them, the Edino Indians. And they lived in this area. And then they were succeeded by the Shawnee, the Miami. And over the summer, I got in touch with a professor from Kenyon College who has gone to Worcester College now, and he did a study of these Indians, these Native Americans. And he said that they were farmers, and they used the three sisters, the maize and the squash and the beans. And what they did was they would clear the land, and then they would take a special stick like an auger, and they would make a hole, and they would put those seeds in there, and then they would put, usually we think about a fish, but it didn't say anything about that. But and then that's how they would do their farming. Well, by about 1834, there were no more Native Americans in any place in Ohio. They pushed them all down to Oklahoma. Now, I went to the GA in 2006 in St. Louis. And I remember the first thing that they did was to read a letter from those Native Americans who used to occupy the land of St. Louis. And they got a letter back. And the letter said something like this, and you can help me with that in your memory. Thank you for your letter asking for permission. However, we are not going to travel 500 miles to assuage your guilt. And that really struck me. They were very polite, but they also wanted to make sure that we understood that an injustice took place. So what I'm asking for us to do is two things this week. I would like for you, and there are two buckets, green buckets, out the front door and then also out the back door. And there's maize in there. There's corn. And I would like for you to take the tiniest little handful of that. And the second thing I need for you to do is to go and find a place on the grounds or in the woods and to lay that down in a very reverent way, and to honor those Native Americans who inhabited this place long before even this college was here. And so for us today to honor the vigor and the civilization and the joy of life of those people as we celebrate our week here. And then also I want you to find that spot. I want you to find that place on the grounds that's very special to you. And I'd like for you to spend a green hour this week. Just take 10 minutes every day, Monday through Saturday, go to that place and just be there for 10 minutes and listen and feel and express your own joy and your own communion with the nature that is all around us. You think you can do that? Okay. There's going to be plenty more corn in those buckets over the course of the week. So be sure that you take a little bit every day when you go back. Now, one caveat here. I don't want you to get lost in the woods. I do not want you to play Hansel and Gretel. If you use these to mark your way when you come back, don't worry. It will not be there. I've got an old song with new words, and please realize that I wrote these. I hold all accountability for them, but it's We Are Climbing Jacob's Ladder, or We Are Dancing Sarah's Circle, but there's brand new words, and I would ask that you would stand with me as we share this together this morning.
Child inside.
Please remain standing if you would. When I was in eighth grade, I had a teacher, Mr. DeLoggi, and he had no control over the class. But I learned more than I ever could in my whole life, and he left us every day with different questions. I remember the question, he said, what are the two substances that contract when heated and expand when cooled? And I pondered and pondered and pondered and pondered and pondered. Does anybody know?
Water.
And rubber. And rubber. Okay, the second question I remember was, if two rattlesnakes were unhappy and angry with each other and they bit one another, what would happen? And I pondered and pondered and pondered, never came up with an answer for that. So, do you have the parting questions on there? What I'd like for you to do is kind of think about this. And for the youth that are amongst us today, can you touch the sky with a stick? And then for us as adults, and there's lots of boulders around here, am I the one sitting on the top of the boulder, or am I the boulder upon which he or she is sitting? Those are going to be in the kaleidoscope, and if you have time, you might want to just kind of ponder those a little bit. And you're welcome to come up to me and say, Steve, those are really silly questions. Let there be peace in the sky and in the atmosphere, peace in the plant world and in the forest. Let the cosmic powers be peaceful. Let Brahma be peaceful. Let there be undiluted and fulfilling peace everywhere. Please be seated for the announcements.
All right, you get to sing this morning, too. I've done this before. Who knows the Mexican hat dance? Exactly. Now, there are words. Did you know there are words to the Mexican hat dance? There are when I do it. S-I-S-I-S-I, our favorite place to be. That's the part you need to know. We're going to sing it twice. So we'll start with that, and then I've got a couple of verses, and you get to sing in between them, too. Are you ready? S-I-S-I-S-I, our favorite place to be. S-I-S-I-S-I, our favorite place to be. Home again in the hills of Gambier, overjoyed to finally be here. So thrilled to see new and old friends. Hard to believe our week here will end. Still to come, we've got workshops and concerts, movie night, coffee houses, and peak. Too few sleep hours, ice cream, and a talent show. Oh my God, we need more than 1 week. You're all hired. Excellent. I'll let you know when the performance is later in the week. Oh wait, we'll do it a couple of times. Regarding ice cream, because I just sang about it, I can't answer exactly the story on the soft serve, except that there was a supply issue, and we think it's going to be resolved, and as soon as I know for sure, we'll let you know. You may even know before I can say it, because it could be lunchtime, we'll see, but there will be. I do have two keys already. One is on a purple lanyard. It says 326. That may or may not be the room number because some of them have secret codes and some of them have room numbers. I also have one that's not on any lanyard. It has a number 147 and some letters. So we'll see if you're missing them. Yes, it is. Yes. We added some purple lanyards very late. No, they're not. So there are a few distinctive purple lanyards out there. Probably those who have them came later because we were running out and these were the additionals. Okay. The art gallery is finished. The Gund Art Gallery, those of you who have been here the last couple of years know that there's been a significant construction project. The library is the building to my left, your right out here. On the other side, there was a construction site for a couple of years. It is the Gund Art Gallery. Yes, there are a few buildings named Gund on campus, but it is the Gund Art Gallery. It is finished. It is open. It is not a hands-on museum. It is going to have some operating hours this week. It is closed on Mondays, so it's not open today. It has a fantastic and very expensive collection in there. When it is open, we are welcome to go in and partake and see what's in there, but not touch. Now I want you to look at your wristbands. This is a message for everyone, but we start with the bright green wristbands and purple wristbands. If you have those colors, Kenyon has asked that you not visit the museum on your own. You need to have an adult to go in with you. If you have an orange or blue wristband and you have someone here with you who has a green or a purple wristband, consider visiting with them because that would be encouraged and allowed. The hours, as far as I know, will be Tuesday through Friday from 1 to 7 each day. I could be off by a couple hours on some days, and we will get the real definite times published in the Kaleidoscope for you. Mahjong players will meet at 1:15 in the afternoon. Beginners are welcome. If you spoke to me yesterday about a location, I do have an answer for you. If you want to know that location, come and see me. I'll be down by the stage when we finish here, and we'll talk about where Mahjong can meet. And I will also get that location into the Kaleidoscope after I touch base with the people who are asking about it. There will be an Al-Anon meeting at 1:30 on Wednesday afternoon. That will be in the basement of the chapel. If you wonder where the chapel is, it's the building on campus that looks most like a church, because that's what it is, in the basement there. We have two workshops that have changed location. One is a morning workshop and one is late afternoon. The leading change in changing times is actually going to be in a classroom that's in the new art gallery building. So it's going to be open and you'll have a space in there. Also, the same presenter is bringing us Chutes and Ladders for Leaders in the afternoon. First of all, know that Chutes and Ladders is not the game as you knew it. It is one of the leadership, congregational leadership modules from all of the congregational leadership training that has happened in our district. So that's in the afternoon. That is also going to be moved to the classroom in the gallery building here. So we'll be open today just for that classroom. Tomorrow, gallery hours happen. Assisted listening devices or hearing assistive devices, we do have those. They're available. You see Larry, who is our fantastic sound guy down here. So anyone to whom that would be helpful, see Larry when you need it. And there is an emergency number that people off campus can use to contact us. I'm not going to give it to you right now because not everybody's prepared to write it down, but we will get it in the Kaleidoscope today. If you need it before the Kaleidoscope comes out, come and see me when we're finished here. And I think that's it. What time is it? Does anyone have the time? I didn't bring my... Okay. 9:30 is our theme talk. The adult small conversation groups, if you signed up to participate in that with your registration this year, 12:45 today in the pub area. The pub in the basement of Pierce, which is the lower level below where we're having our meals. If you aren't familiar with it, ask anyone who's been here before. They'll probably know where the pub is. And that's at 12:45 today. What? Newsletter workers, if your work shift is to assist on the newsletter, you're going to go to Upper Gund. The other Gund, that's where we registered yesterday. That's called Gund Commons. The upper level, there is a computer room that's on the opposite side of the building from the ballroom that we registered in, and that's where your work shift is going to be. All right. And I will take written announcements. I will sometimes decide that they should be announced at a different time, but if you give them to me in writing, that's best, so we don't have to keep you here. We are going to be ready for our theme talk, so wherever you are headed from here, get up and move around, and we'll see you back here shortly for our morning theme talk.